This is a special report from ABC News. Baltimore Bridge collapse. I'm Sherry Preston. A large container ship ramming into the Key Bridge in Baltimore overnight, causing it to snap and plunge into the river below. Several vehicles falling into the chilly waters. Search teams looking for people who may have fallen in as well. ABC's Ike Adjachi is on the scene of the collapse.
There's a video circulating on social media right now of this entire incident. In the minutes before that collision, traffic was regular on that bridge, but just before that collision, it appears that the traffic has indeed stopped. Now, there is a question whether or not the bridge was alerted prior to the collision from the individuals on the boat. If that's so, that could have been a possible reason why it appeared as if the traffic had slowed down.
The bridge collapse has paralyzed the Port of Baltimore, which is the primary waterway giant container ships arrive from the Chesapeake Bay. Some are saying fully repairing the Key Bridge could take years. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. 501c4 nonprofits are driving record spending by anonymous political donors across the country. That's according to a new study from the group Open Secrets.
In some states, you can actually have 501c4 dark money groups or shell companies contribute directly to candidates' campaigns, which is something that's not allowed at the federal level. They're only allowed to spend in support of the candidate.
Study author Anna Masolia says that kind of money often pays for misleading attack ads. Cheating on your spouse is technically a felony in Wisconsin, which can land you in jail for 3 months and up to $10,000 in fines. Authorities rarely pursue charges, but there's a move to take the law off the books in other states like New York. Lawmakers there say prosecutors should not dig into what consenting adults do behind closed doors. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. A Superior bar and apartment building have been demolished following a Thanksgiving fire that left the structures condemned. According to a Fox 21 report, demolition crews were seen taking down the former Viking Lounge and the apartments on Superior's north end on Monday. The fire that caused the damage broke out around 10 a.m. on November 23rd, and fire department officials believe it was started by a lit cigarette that was thrown into a small crawl space below the ground floor. 14 people were left homeless. A number of businesses and services were forced to close on Monday as a late winter storm rolled through the area. City of Duluth officials say bus service through the Duluth Transit Authority and Stride Paratransit were canceled for the entire day due to the conditions on the road. The Duluth and Superior YMCAs canceled a number of their programs as well as the Community Action Duluth tax site. In addition to Monday's closures, some of Second Harvest Northland's mobile food pantries will also be canceled on Tuesday. And that's what you need to know. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
The Brewers lose their leadoff batter. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Garrett Mitchell was expected to be the Brewers' leadoff hitter for Thursday's opening day in New York against the Mets, but after an MRI, it was discovered the 25-year-old center fielder suffered a fracture in his left hand. He's expected to go on the injured list and be out the first 4 to 8 weeks of the season. Mitchell hurt the hand during batting practice over the weekend. He missed most of last season with a shoulder injury. NBA, the Bucks host the LA Lakers tonight at Fiserv Forum. LeBron James, who's been dealing with an ankle injury, is not expected to play. NFL meetings going on in Orlando. Packers GM Brian Gutekunst says he's glad running back A.J. Dillon agreed to re-sign with the team because there was no way they could have hung on to both Josh Jacobs and Aaron Jones.
To get A.J. back, it was that was a kind of a nice surprise. But I think that, you know, the free agent running back class was very, you know, it was very strong. There's a bunch of experienced runners out there.
That's Packers GM Brian Gutekunst. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
It is going to be cloudy with a few rain showers this morning. That will change to snow by mid to late morning with another inch or so of accumulation possible by the time everything winds down late today into this evening. Temperatures falling as well will drop into the low 20s by late afternoon. The wind northwest 10 to 20. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy. Could see a few flurries with a high near 27. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 33.
Matt and Air on Air.
The hearing surrounding the alleged Biden crime family didn't go very well for House Republicans. They got nothing.
They also have no way of moving this country forward. Every 45 days, we're on the brink of a shutdown because these idiots can't come together and put forth a budget. How about this? You don't get to try to impeach anybody until you finish your homework.
I would heartily back that.
Matt and Air on Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Sawyer County's choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, I remember this like yesterday. I was still working at A.L. Smith, a company that I worked for 34 years. And I was working towards this pension that I didn't think I'd ever get old enough to get at that point in time. That was for old people. And so they kept telling me about this pension and the older guys. And I'm a young guy, right? Hey, man, you're gonna have a pension. Okay, what is that, man? I'm in my 30s, man. You talking about pension? What is that? Well, every contract we talked about whether or not we should get some additional dollars into our pension or we can have our money up front. And so there were times people say, well, give us the money up front. We couldn't see.
Yeah, young guys want the money up front, right?
Yeah, we wanted
to show me the money and put it in the.
And the older guys kept saying we would have this debate.
Put it under the mattress.
Yeah, put it in the pension. And so to make a long story short, I remember them coming up with this idea called the 401k. And I remember we were so excited. We had already been vested for our pension. So we were locked into our pensions. They couldn't take away our pensions. We were entitled to those. We had been vested. But we also had this 401k on the side. And so we were just dumping money into the 401k. And we were making a lot of money, and we were putting money there, and we believed everything that they said about that 401k. Well, here, you know, it's decades now since, and this is today in the Hill, a taxing problem for middle-class America. Why are we penalizing people in need? For many decades, middle-class Americans have relied on investing in private retirement programs, and the thing that really made me stop and pause was many decades. I remember when it just came into vogue, right?
Several decades would be the right number. But, you know,
Let me finish the paragraph. Yeah. For many decades, many middle-class Americans have relied on investing in private retirement programs to supplement Social Security income and prepare for retirement. Recently, more of those same middle-class Americans have had to withdraw from those accounts early, forcing them to pay exorbitant fines and taxes. For the last 20 years, I have been advising people not to take early distributions on their retirement accounts unless absolutely necessary to safeguard their retirements. For many middle-class earners, however, These measures do not dissuade them. They just have to accept the penalty. It's the only place they can get money.
Well, here's the problem, and it's, you know, that penalty is there to try and discipline people to keep the money in that account so that it's there for retirement, because the whole reason for tax deferring, and when you put money into a 401k, you're taking it out of your income before you're
untaxed,
and you put it in there, and it doesn't get taxed until you take it out after you retire. And so what the whole government incentive program, not taxing it, was designed to create a private pension fund that each person would create for themselves. And if they can take the money out next year, well, then it doesn't have that effect. And so they're trying to penalize you. And I'm not sure I'm against the penalty. What I'm against is the 401k principle itself, in that in today's economy, our middle class and those people who reside within 15% of the middle class, the upper middle class, the middle class, and everyone below the middle class, is living paycheck to paycheck. If you're living paycheck to paycheck, you don't have that extra money that you just described that you were dumping. You said you dumped it into a 401k. People aren't dumping. In the middle class today, no one's dumping money into savings. They don't have money to save. They're living paycheck to paycheck. They have child daycare costs. They have student loan costs. They have future student costs for their own children, the
mortgage
education costs. They have mortgage costs. Well, they had those before. Now they've got health care costs they didn't have before, so that we've morphed into an economy where now there's a bunch of benefit costs that weren't borne by the middle class before are being borne today and make it very hard for people to fund a 401k. So they don't even have the problem of taking the money out with a penalty. They don't have the money in there, okay? And so what we need to do is get back to an economy in which the middle class actually has enough money to save to put into a 401k, and that's what we ought to be talking about. Not this question of whether we should be penalizing them for taking it out. We ought to be scratching our heads and saying, why do they need to take it out? And the reason they need to take it out is they can't any longer afford even to put it in.
You know, Sandy, when you talk about we need to address the fact that people aren't making enough, back in the days that I'm talking about,
well, they might be making enough, but their benefits are being presented to them in a way that they're too expensive. If they still had health care at work before they, you know, that they didn't notice the cost of because it was they got their paycheck and they got health care benefits on top of it, it was different. If when they got retirement benefits on top of their paycheck, they didn't have to worry about setting money aside for their retirement. So what happened from 1970 to the year 2000 was this whole benefit formula was taken away from being borne by the employer and was dumped on the shoulders of the employee.
You know, when you talk about the benefits, and I hadn't thought about it much until now, but I have a death benefit that was part of our benefit package. We had vacations. We had personal days. We had, you know, we had 1 week's vacation for the first 3 years. Then after 3 years, you got one added vacation. We had as many as 6 weeks of vacation paid. Personal days. All sorts of benefits. Like I told you, even the death benefit in addition to pensions. Benefit packages were almost as much as you made, right?
Well, I'm just pointing out that the change in the way employees now receive benefits has put the burden on their shoulders and has caused them to be behind an eight ball in which it's much harder to save money today. First of all, when you had all those benefits, you didn't need to save as much money.
No.
Because you didn't need to save for the pension that was going to be presented to
right.
you. Now you don't have a pension. You need to save money, and yet the rest of your benefit profile and the rest of your income profile makes it harder to save money. So the whole 401k thing is a little bit illusory, and only those who are in the upper echelons of our income scale can live comfortably, can contribute to their 401k, have their employer contribute. It all works out great.
So
for the people who earn enough.
So Sandy, if you really look at this thing from our generation's perspective, you know, we didn't have those worries. We didn't have those worries that people today have to think about, have to worry about. And they're right for being angry and upset because of this. What they never knew about the kind of benefit packages. I don't know what they're offering in benefit packages today, but those benefit packages that we took for granted, we just thought those things would never end. Right?
Yeah.
And now it's ended, and now people who have 401ks are not getting as much of a benefit as we got, unless they're very, very disciplined, as you stated. And even if they are very, very disciplined, maybe the long-term packages and the amount of money that they'll receive may not even be equivalent to what we got in our pensions.
Well,
30 years ago.
No, I mean, you know, the ceiling on what can be put into a 401k isn't really large enough to. And so, you know, to be really disciplined, people need to have a 401k. They need to have a Roth plan on top of it, which is after-tax contributions. You know, it takes a lot of discipline, but, you know, that discipline needs to come with enough income so that the exercise of the discipline can be applied to enough income. Because if you are actually just plain living paycheck to paycheck to pay your utilities, your mortgage, all the fundamental costs, and then you have student debt on top of it, or you have savings for your children's education on top of it, you can't get there, okay? And I'm just saying that when you look at the budget for today's middle-class family, they can't get there.
Okay, so Sandy, who fixes that? Who corrects that? Where in the business community?
Well, the only
is there going to be, you know, somebody who says benevolence enough to say,
well, there's only a couple of levers. I mean, you could, to the extent that minimum wage is necessary to so that people earn livable wages, that needs to be considered. That's a governmental action to mandate minimum wages.
But even minimum wage, Sandy,
wage isn't enough. And so then the other question is benefits. So, you know, we need to, you know, Obama tried to fix the healthcare system, but the compromises that had to go on to get there robbed it of its capacity to provide affordable. It is now available, but it's not necessarily affordable because of the loss of the mandate for insurance and the expense of medical insurance today. But so we need to get child daycare and medical costs for the family controlled, and the only entity to really focus on those two things is the government.
So long term, it's a catastrophe waiting to happen as these generations age. It's going to be a difficult lift, and there'll be more and more people impoverished.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact is that 401ks, as said in what you quoted, was designed to supplement Social Security. It's so you need to have Social Security as the backbone. So Social Security needs to survive going forward. It needs to survive with the cost of living allowance adjustment all the way along, so that so the real dollars in it are sufficient. And so, you know, that's going to be expensive 25, 30 years from now. The government needs to we need as a people to face up to the fact that we need to be able to adequately fund that. And we also need to work on the design of our economy, the architecture of it, so that people are earning enough to take care of themselves.
844-967-2789 is the number. Tom, I see you. 844-967-2789. Hang with us. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. She's got a ticket to ride, and she don't care.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Are record energy costs putting a squeeze on your fixed or limited incomes? With inflation rising at record levels and incomes not keeping pace, you might be one of tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents who are struggling to survive in the blistering heat of summer or the bitter cold of winter. While you haven't asked for it, the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help. No Wisconsin resident should ever have to face the challenge of living without heat or power or face homelessness. For a hand up, apply today and call
800-506-5596. That's 800-506-5596. Or visit www.heat.help.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Mrs. Robin.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday is my co-host, Sandy Williams. And you know, Sandy, before we go to the phone lines, you know, because people don't want to talk about this and these subjects on a national level, doesn't mean that these aren't critically important discussions that our government should be having.
Well, we as a people and our government need to have it. We've got a middle class that's, let's say, the millennial middle class that's distant from retirement but moving towards it. When it gets to retirement, it's not going to have as many homes. It's not going to have as much home equity as the baby boomers had. They're not going to have pensions provided to them by their employer. They're going to have to rely solely on their own savings and Social Security. And so many more of the people getting to retirement in the future will get there and be solely reliant on Social Security, whereas today the percentage of people who are solely reliant on Social Security is much lower, okay? And so, you know, we've got a problem. So we talk about the Social Security problem, but we have a whole, we have generations of people moving towards retirement and will become more dependent on Social Security than the current generations have been.
You know, Sandy, I was talking about a woman yesterday, I forgot where she lived. She was 91 years old. She's been living off her Social Security and a pension for 25 years. She totals $1,386 a month. And she's been living off of that for 25 years. Now, when you contrast that with what's coming down the pike, in 25 years from now, when some of the people are preparing to retire, the dollar and what it's going to be worth and all those different things.
Well, I mean, but you look at the typical American dream. You own a home, and by the time you reach retirement, you have, it's all equity. You don't have a mortgage anymore. Well, then when push comes to shove, and
you can sell your house.
You can sell your house, and you've got years of income that available to you. So the whole model for retirement that we've lived under is going to be different for those who are the generations behind us who won't own as many homes because home ownership has become more difficult, who won't be able to save money because they've had to live paycheck to paycheck because of the way the middle class is forced to live today. And so this is all stuff we ought to be paying attention to, I think. And I think that tax cuts and all the stuff that people have dilly-dallied around in Congress about is totally not only kicking the can down the road, but ignoring, turning their back on the issues.
So, Sandy, it'll be survival, not retirement. Let's go to Tom from L.A. Good morning to you, Tom. Thank you for holding. You say what?
Earl. First off, we the people ultimately are the government. And we must remember that. We must remember that we are the people that can actually change things. And we're not victims in this thing. We can actually stand up and vote out those people that are not in favor of things like Social Security being actually increased, you know, things like that. I keep coming up with the same acronym, CHTR, child care, health care, taxes, rent, or mortgage. And those those are the four things that Sandy has talked about that are the things that we should be talking about to every politician. And we should be saying, how is it that you want us to make it when it's $16,000 for each of those indices? That's and you're something's got to give. And what I guess my question is to some of you guys that are older is, years ago, it sounds to me like healthcare was completely taken care of. Even the premiums were taken care of by
the company,
by the insurance or by the company, and that the child care, maybe more people were staying home because, you know, to raise their kids or whatever it was, and maybe that took care of that cost. Taxes probably were about the same, and the mortgage and the rent has definitely gone up.
Well, actually,
those are the four areas.
The mortgage and rent probably haven't gone up in real dollars that very much. The real problem are the first two. The health care was totally taken care of. People never even talked about it. It just happened. You got a card at work, and your card worked when you went to the doctor, and that was it. And one income earner was all that was required to reach the middle class, and the average family in the United States had one breadwinner, not two. And so daycare wasn't anything people talked about either. In fact, we used to point over at the Soviet Union and say those people are dumping their kids into daycare, and it's just they're getting propagandized into communism and daycare. We talked about it like that because it was not even something that was done in the United States. It's those two things primarily, as well as education, student loan debt, and the cost of education that has really caused huge problems, as well as the pension. Pensions were provided at work. You didn't have to save for it. It just happened.
You know, blue collar or white collar, that was the difference. Even if you were blue collar, as I was, you were able to make enough money to do those things. And so, you know, it's not always the case anymore.
Well, blue collar, if you had a union job, you had a pension, you had health care.
That's what I mean.
The things have changed. That's what Washington is ignoring, and they've participated in the change because the businesses went to them and said, we don't think this private pension thing works anymore. Let's set up the 401k. And everyone bought into it in the 90s. And it was kind of illusory. You know, it seemed like a great idea at the time, except when you look at it in retrospect, it still requires people to have enough income to exercise the discipline to save.
Well, you know, whether it's a conversation that is romantic, it's not, but it is without question it's something that is going to be a major problem in the coming decades in this country. And so the argument about whether we spend $800 billion or $1 million on military, they're going to start having to fight that battle more so in the coming years than they are able to get away with now, Sandy.
Well, absolutely. I think that as we begin to get more disciplined as a nation and worry about our deficit expenditures, so that, you know, what's happened today is we financed... People can say, well, we finance entitlements on deficits. No, I think we finance tax reductions on deficits. And the history is clear that that's what we've done. So we've exercised a lack of discipline in the direction of not supporting Tom, Dick, and Mary, but supporting those who have political power with our deficits. And I think when we get more disciplined, we're going to be forced to look at how we spend our money, and hopefully we'll spend more of it in the direction of supporting the people.
All right, 844-967-2789 is the number. We're going to talk a little bit about, the UN and the ceasefire on the other side. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
Is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News.
I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Authorities in western Wisconsin are getting to the bottom of why a man from Texas died while cleaning a municipal water tank in Blair Saturday afternoon. He was wearing scuba gear but may have become hypothermic. Co-workers tried pulling him out, but he got stuck and died. Wisconsin's election mythbusters are at it again tonight, this time in West Bend. Kathy Bernier of Keep Our Republic says election skeptics are often surprised when they see how hard it really would be to fix an election.
The care that the election officials take in preparing for the election and after the election and all of the audits and the canvasses that take place, they're very surprised.
Bernier tells WYSN-TV's Upfront she hopes her work will ensure no accusations or drama in Wisconsin after November's votes are counted. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. Duluth residents have started a new internet challenge to let billionaire Kathy Cargill know they don't need her anyway. Cargill recently called the Duluth community small-minded in a Wall Street Journal report after residents and Mayor Roger Reinhart questioned her intention in buying 20 properties in Park Point. After a comment about Cheerios in the report, Duluth residents have started the Duluth Cheerio Challenge, which aims to donate as many boxes of healthy cereal as possible to local food shelves. The Bong Center in Superior has announced they will send experts searching for the World War II aircraft flown by their namesake. According to a Northern News Now report, Richard Bong flew the plane named after his girlfriend Marge to 20 aerial victories in World War II, but it was lost when another pilot experienced mechanical troubles while flying it and bailed out. The search will be conducted by Pacific Rex with funding from the Bong Center. The Bong Center also plans to live stream the search effort in May.
And that's what you need to know. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
These two referendum that you will see on your April 2nd ballot. What is it that Republicans are after here? You cut funding for local elections. You restrict the hours. You restrict early voting. You intimidate and scare election workers so droves of them are quitting. I wonder where all of this is heading.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. Little House on the Prairie fans will love this. Melissa Gilbert said in a recent interview that instead of accepting payment for hosting the Rose Bowl parade, show creator and co-star Michael Landon would use that money to buy gifts for the cast of his show. While reminiscing about Little House as the show's 50th anniversary nears, Gilbert talked about her special bond with Landon since her own father passed away when she was 11. Michael Landon died in 1991 at the age of 54 from cancer. Pamela Anderson's former husband and co-star of the stolen Pam and Tommy home video, Tommy Lee, apparently flipped out over seeing her kiss another guy on the set of Baywatch. Do you believe on a show where people are totally hot and barely wearing clothes at all, they wrote a kiss into a scene? You'd think he might have seen that coming. Instead, he trashed her trailer. That Tommy Lee is incorrigible. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, every night between 7 and 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be cloudy with a few rain showers this morning. That will change to snow by mid to late morning with another inch or so of accumulation possible by the time everything winds down late today into this evening. Temperatures falling as well will drop into the low 20s by late afternoon. The wind northwest 10 to 20. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy. Could see a few flurries with a high near 27. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now it's 31.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
I ate at gas stations today. You took me to the finer gas station.
You drove, dude. What are you talking about? You're a grown-ass man. You go get yourself a piece of cherry pie, man. What do you want me to do?
Do I look like a roasted turkey to you right now? I know you're hungry. Like the cartoon style?
You do look like a...
Beef? A little piece of bacon, a slab of meat, something?
Oh, yeah.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. From Birchwood to Poplar, this is the Buzz of the North. 910 AM WBZH. Your home for news, talk, and sports.
Come in, sir.
I'll say what
what you want to hear. I'll be telling you for many a year, I'm in love with you now.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with Sandy Williams. And we've got Marlene, who's been hanging on from Wales. Good morning to you, Marlene. Thank you for the call. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. I just wondered, it keeps coming up about the cost of medical care. And, of course, it's not really being covered by employers to a great extent anymore. But I know a number of decades ago, I'm not that old, yes, I am, but in Wisconsin, it was against the law for hospitals to be for profit. And now I just saw something on the news, I think in 2022, Wisconsin hospitals made $40 billion. Also, there was a board, it was like a public service commission that said what major clinics could be opened. So there couldn't be an MRI machine or large CAT scan machines installed in, you know, just wherever the company wanted to. And I was working at GE Healthcare at the time, and we were working on movable equipment that required this intensive capital investment. And somewhere along the line, all that regulation went away, and I'm not sure where. Any ideas?
Well, yeah, I participated in some of it in Wisconsin. You couldn't build a hospital without a certificate of need, and there were regulations associated with big investments because the government knew they were going to have to pay for them in Medicaid, Medicare, and the insurers were interested as well. But where did it go? I think K Street, but also lots of this regulation was done at the state level. And so the influence that was peddled at the state level to get rid of it, and it was effectively gotten rid of. So now there is very little in the way of state regulation of the medical industry.
Yeah, somehow, and I feel bad as a citizen, I missed that whole. Of course, they hide those kind of laws. They're just worried about banning books and stuff. That's what we want to put on the news, not the things that are actually going to affect people's health and welfare overall. But thank you very much.
You know, Marlene, thank you for those words and thank you for the call. And that's what we try to do, you know, is talk about these kinds of issues that maybe aren't, you know, the kinds of issues that, you know, people want to, you know, talk about as much, but they're critically important to what's going to happen in their lives.
Well, you know, what happens is that when government tries to regulate industry, the most affected parties are the industry. And the people who are the beneficiaries of the regulation, the public, frequently is kind of unaware of the fact that it's going on. So that much of the regulation of the health industry was kind of a secret between the regulators and the regulated industries, and the public wasn't aware of why it was going on or how it might benefit them. And so the regulated industries flexed their muscle and they decided it was inconvenient. It's always inconvenient to be regulated. It's much easier to operate without regulation and do whatever you want. But regulation is there to sort of save the public, and sometimes it's there to save the regulated industry. I think the CEO, I mentioned this last week, but you can look at Boeing and the failures of Boeing and now the complete turnover of its management. The Boeing needed to be saved from itself, and unfortunately regulation had lapsed to the point where it didn't get that help.
You know, Sandy, UN demand for Gaza ceasefire provoked strongest clash between U.S. and Israel since the war began. Clearly, Joe Biden and the United States and the UN are beginning to put real pressure on Israel. Can Netanyahu completely dismiss all of that and stand alone?
Well, I think Netanyahu's trying to flex his muscle in American politics. This aborted trip to Washington, right, by representatives of Israel to talk was called off by Netanyahu. I'm sure he did it as a political play to try and excite his base in the United States to be angry with Biden for the fact that the United States, instead of vetoing the resolution at the UN, abstained from voting. And as far as Netanyahu is concerned, the UN resolution wasn't harsh enough about Hamas and so he was angry with the U.S. I don't know. It's the tail wagging the dog, as far as I can tell. I mean, I think the United States, like I talked about people being saved from themselves, I do think that the United States is trying its hardest to save Israel from itself, from a policy that is going to put Israel into very difficult posture in the world, and it doesn't need to do that.
You know, Sandy, the United Nations Security Council on Monday issued its first demand. You know, they have not demanded anything, but now they're at the point, you know, where they're demanding that Israel do something. And the United States, I guess Israel expected and Netanyahu expected the United States to, you know.
Well, we vetoed on their behalf.
Before.
I mean, the Security Council is a limited, small number of countries, 8, I think, and each one of them, anything that passes the Security Council has to be unanimous. So there's a blackball. And so the United States, Russia, China are typically the nations who exercise blackball rights to veto. And Israel was looking for the United States to stand behind it and veto the resolution. It didn't do it. And it interestingly, had offered a resolution almost identical to this, the United States had last week. And it didn't pass because China and Russia vetoed it because they said it wasn't, it was too harsh with respect to Hamas. But, you know, I think the United States is trying to do the right thing here, and I think Netanyahu's making a mistake.
You know, Sandy, I just don't believe that Israel and Netanyahu is going to be able to totally ignore this for much longer.
Well, unfortunately, the United Nations doesn't have
any power.
Any actual power, so it's kind of whistling in the dark. And I suspect that Netanyahu is likely to thumb his nose at it, just as he has the United States. And we'll see how that goes. But there's also public opinion within Israel that Netanyahu has to deal with, and I suspect that could become more important to him. Right now, he's catering to the hard right. And we'll see how that goes.
Well, so there's pushback now towards Netanyahu from inside of the United States because he's trying to tell our government and send mixed messages to the American people about decisions that are being made on the highest level of our government.
Well,
and he's not going to win that.
Well, I think he's made a mistake in politicizing it. He's decided that he's going to put his bets on the Republican Party. He's talking
right.
Talks to the Republican caucus. You know, he came and visited prior in a situation that was clearly aimed at Republican support. I don't think Israel wants its support to be premised on partisan politics in the United States. I think that's a mistake.
Yeah, and clearly based on the things that I'm reading, White House National Security Spokesman John Kirby said the administration was kind of perplexed by Netanyahu's decision. He said the Israelis were choosing to create a perception of daylight here when they don't need to do that. Kirby and the American ambassador to the UN said the U.S. abstained because the resolution did not condemn Hamas. U.S. officials chose to abstain rather than vetoed the proposal because it does fairly reflect our view in the ceasefire and the release of hostages come together. So you can't, I guess from the perspective of Netanyahu, if you're not with us, as George Bush once said, you're against us. And the United States is saying, no, it's not that simplistic.
Right. I mean, I think what the State Department is saying is, look, there isn't that much daylight between the U.S. and Israeli position for Netanyahu to make a big thing out of it. But I think Netanyahu's trying to play the partisan politics in the United States. He's trying to make this into a presidential campaign issue, and he thinks he's going to put pressure on Biden in that fashion. And I just think that it's compounding errors.
Well,
I think that United States support is important to Israel. I think that the United States does, in fact, support Israel. And the notion that the constructive criticism of Israel's policy with respect to Gaza is a bad situation is just erroneous.
Well, he doesn't win when he says, well, Biden's playing politics because he wants to make sure he's elected. I mean, Biden has certainly bent over backwards to support Netanyahu and Israel in this whole situation. And you don't do yourself any favors by now saying publicly that Joe Biden is playing politics with this.
Well, the politics of America and the public opinion of America is a reality that needs to be taken into account, just like the public opinion in the world is a fact that needs to be taken into account. And I'm afraid that Netanyahu is not doing either of those.
You know, it just comes to a point where, you know, there's been this conversation about ceasefire. I think at some point in time, Sandy, soon, Netanyahu will rethink this. I know what his first response was to certainly to fight back and fire back, but I think once they continue to have the conversations and dialogue, you know, that cooler heads will prevail, and he'll realize there's, yeah, you know, maybe there's the time is coming.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the long plan is that Netanyahu has in mind. If his plan includes getting all the Palestinians moved out of Gaza, then I think the United States will have trouble supporting him in the long run if that's where the direction moves in terms of what he's doing. I think he is intent on a military attempt, the effort to destroy Hamas militarily. I'm not an expert, but my sense is that it's almost impossible to destroy a people's movement like Hamas militarily.
Well,
that the military effort to destroy it probably infuses it with some added strength.
Well, an expert did speak on it, Donald Trump.
Oh,
you know, he clearly stated that Israel has made a mistake.
Well, no, you and I talked about that. I read what Donald Trump said. Yeah. It was word salad. His word salad started out by saying they made a mistake. Well, first of all, he said, I would have done exactly what they did. Then he said they made a mistake. And then the mistake that they seemed to be making in his description was to allow photographs and news media to cover the war in Gaza and all the destruction, because then the world saw all the destruction, and that was a horrible thing. But it wasn't clear whether he was saying the destruction was a horrible thing or whether the world seeing it was the horrible thing, and it was essentially destroying their brand. And quite frankly, when I got done reading the word salad, number one, I decided that one thing Donald Trump does is say everything so that there's something there for everyone, number one. Number two, if I was to try to discern what he was really saying, he was saying it was really bad for the brand. They shouldn't have allowed all this media coverage because it was really bad for the brand.
Yeah, I mean, you come to a point. Let's do this. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll continue the conversation. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
Before, say you love me and I will be sure.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Most of us can agree the decision to have an abortion should be between a person and their doctor. Politicians should have no say at all. Thankfully, Senator Tammy Baldwin is standing up for our rights and working to keep politicians out of our medical decisions. After Roe v. Wade, the court case that protected abortion rights was overturned, Tammy Baldwin introduced the Women's Health Protection Act, which would ensure access to abortion everywhere in the United States, including here in Wisconsin. The bill would end extreme abortion bans that have no exceptions for rape, incest, or the life of the mother, and threaten doctors with criminal charges for providing abortion care. Senator Baldwin also introduced legislation that would protect the right to travel across state lines for reproductive health care and safeguard access to contraception. Call Senator Tammy Baldwin at 202-224-5653. Tell her thank you for fighting back against extreme abortion bans. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Welcome back to the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, I was reading this article on Cuba and the fact that, you know, after all these decades, you know, half century or more, we still won't have dialogue with Cuba. And it makes no sense at all why, you know, President Obama tried to open up diplomatic, you know, doors to Cuba. And Joe Biden is the president now, and he is shutting some of those doors. Why won't we? Cuba's a little, small island. Why are we? They are one of our major enemies. What threat are they to us?
Florida. And they don't threaten Florida directly, but politics of Florida are all about Cuba. There's a bunch of Cuban expats fled Cuba when Castro took over and took all their property away, and they fled to Miami. And, you know, we've got Marco Rubio as a representative showing that demonstrating the strength of Cuba, Cubans in politics, and particularly the understanding that those Cubans are all terribly anti-communist, okay, and they want communism eliminated. So essentially, I suspect they can go back and reclaim their property. But it's all about Florida. It's all about Florida politics. Obama opened up Cuba in his second term when he wasn't going to run for election right. again because he was no longer in need of Florida. Okay, and I'm sure that Biden is now being very careful about his policies towards Cuba because Florida is a state that's potentially in play in the national election. And so it's really just all about state politics, Florida. It's not about Cuba. Cuba is not a threat to the United States.
No.
Cuba's economy is collapsing. Its government is near collapse. It still represents a potentially a great destination for resort activities and resort investment. There's every reason to think that it would make sense to try and reopen the Cuba relationship, but Florida and Florida politics stands in the way of doing so in the current environment.
You know, Sandy, whether we want to believe it or not, or whether we want to continue to address all these political, everything is political, right? I don't care what it is. It's all political.
Yeah, I mean, things have gotten more and more political. And quite frankly, that has always been political since the Bay of Pigs, you know, since you know, you can go back to that event during JFK's tenure. But ever since then, Florida and Florida politics has had everything to do with American policy towards Cuba.
So, Sandy, two big decisions are going to be made real soon. VP candidates for RFK Jr. And Donald Trump. And there's now conversation about possibly little Marco Rubio becoming a vice presidential person for Donald Trump. Your thoughts?
I don't have many thoughts about that. Rubio, I thought, had started distancing himself from Trump. I would be surprised. My guess is that the governor of South Dakota or some such will become the vice presidential candidate, someone who's not without great political power themselves, but has some attractive qualities. And in that case, it would be being a woman.
Oh, really? You see Donald Trump, you think he has the what it takes to be able to have a woman right next to him as vice president?
Well, I doubt whether the vice president will ever be right next to Donald Trump. I don't think Donald Trump's ego permits anyone else in the room attracting attention. So, I wouldn't guess that someone as strong-minded as Marco Rubio would be selection either.
What about Robert F. Kennedy Jr.?
As his vice presidential candidate?
Yeah, no. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as a vice president. His candidate.
Who is his vice presidential candidate going to be?
Yeah.
Oh, my. I don't know. It's quite a gallery of people that have been talked about. There's this woman attorney who married Sergey Brin and divorced him, but came out of it with billions of dollars.
It's clearly not going to be Aaron Rodgers.
No, it's not. I don't think it's going to be Aaron Rodgers. Nope.
Yeah, well,
but I think it might be this the woman that they're talking about.
So, but you know, clearly, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Jill Stein and all of these others who are struggling to get on the ballot. Jill Stein is already on the ballot, but anybody else, it's not going to really make much of a difference. It will make a difference in the outcome when the turnouts aren't going to be.
Well, I think RFK's polling numbers and such cause him to be something that could come closer to looking like Ross Perot than to John Anderson. John Anderson ran as a third-party candidate against Jimmy Carter, and even just the 6 or 8% he got probably cost Carter re-election the first time with Reagan. And there's no question that Ross Perot had an impact in the Clinton election. He got 18%. I think RFK is going to get a significant percentage of the vote, and by significant I mean north of 10%.
So who would he take it from?
That's the question. His policy discussions suggest to me that he might take more from Donald Trump than he would from Biden. But who knows? Neither candidate is particularly popular, even with their constituent group, the party at least. And so there's a possibility of protest votes on both sides.
All right. We got to leave it there. That's Sandy Williams, my co-host, Tuesdays and Fridays. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Calvin. Up next, Jane Matinere and Matinere on the Air and Greg Bosch. See you later.
Hometown station for news, talk, and sports. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Being blind doesn't always look how others may think. Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
I know where to find support and where I can be seen.
Innovative research, educational resources, supportive community. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is leading the charge in finding treatments and cures for blinding diseases. Learn more at fightingblindness.org. A public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. Baltimore bridge collapse. I'm Sherry Preston. Maryland Governor Wes Moore says